Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, this on a Wednesday, we are loaded, is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Drew Bledsoe today. Nick Wright will yell at me today. It is great to have you, and Joy Taylor is joining me today. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Drew Bledsoe.
Drew Bledsoe next hour, former Patriot and Cowboy.
That's awesome.
He is a great friend of the show. Drink his wine as well. He's got one of those celebrity wineries that's really, really an amazing winery. I want to start with this, though. You can be smart, but you have a blind spot and you make mistakes. So, I mean, I've been very lucky in my life. I've worked with a lot of smart people, but maybe because of the way you're raised, you can have blind spots. Smart people cannot see obvious things sometimes. I would say older Americans sometimes struggle with tech. Brilliant Americans over 60 years old. Billionaires struggle with tech. My 12, 13-year-old son knows more tech than the average 60-year-old billionaire. It's just the way the reality works. Jerry Jones, a very smart man. And Jerry Jones was talking about the Dallas Cowboys and the fact that he's the general manager. And, you know, Jerry Jones, for the last 65 years, has been successful in everything. Oil, retail, sports. He's got 25 different businesses. Stan Kroenke, who's the richest or second richest NFL owner, relies on him. They're very close friends. So, of course, when Jerry wakes up in the morning, after 50, 60 years of being successful, he thinks, I'm a pretty smart guy. But I think Jerry has a blind spot, and I've seen this a lot. So he was talking on Dallas radio yesterday about, yes, I'm the GM. Yes, it all goes through me.
When you can cut out the person between the decision maker and the people doing the recommending, then you can make quicker, more succinct, and more responsive decisions. Nobody ever has had the final say but me. Now, you know, I really don't like to say that, but that's a fact. And so when we don't do good, we all know who the ultimate total responsibility. And pro football, the guy that ultimately has the responsibility for paying the bills, makes the decision.
So he's sort of bragging about it, but he's ultimately diagnosing the Cowboys' problem. They're a huge brand, but they're too insular. So this is Jerry's blind spot. He's built a $5.5 billion family business. And he does watch football, but mostly cowboy football, I've been told. And this is where the Cowboys have an issue, and I've seen this happen with a lot of businesses. It's a family business. Do you know the Cowboys head coach is a former cowboy? The Cowboy quarterback coach is a former cowboy. The Cowboy offensive coordinator is a former cowboy. The offensive line coach is a former cowboy. The defensive tackle coach is a former cowboy. Cowboy, cowboy, family, family, cowboy. When you do not have a global search, when you do not move outside of your family, I've seen this a million times in college football where you hire the top assistant, the coach leaves. Let's just hire the longtime, a loyal assistant. My whole life in the Pacific Northwest, it never worked. You got to go outside the family. Now, Charlotte, I mean, it's a classic family business. Jerry's the patriarch. His ambitious son is the number two. His super smart daughter, Charlotte, who went to Stanford. I've met her. She's sharp as a tack. She's the, you know, runs the operation. Then the kind of less aspirational son sells stuff. And then Jason Garrett's brother is the director of scouting. And Jason Garrett's always been the adopted sort of son for Dallas. The Cowboys are like a college football program that won't go outside the athletic department. Like, they won't go on a global search and find the best people. Oh, by the way, they did it briefly, Jimmy Johnson. They did it briefly with Jimmy, and we're not comfortable. Jimmy's got too much power. All right. And I did it briefly with Bill Parcells. He was outside of the family. It's just these guys got a little too much power. This, you can be smart and have blinders on. The term I always use is sometimes you have to take the telescope, flip it over, and look through the other side of the telescope, the other view of the world. And I think with Dallas, you can have a big brand and a great business, but be insular. They're sort of like Walmart. Like, it's the Walton family, and there's nothing against Walmart. They built a great brand, but, you know, if even when you hired a CEO for Walmart, he felt like an outsider, he had no real power. Eric Mangini was on First Things First this morning, and he brought up a fascinating point about the downside to everybody in the building being a cowboy, and there's been very few global searches and people outside of the cowboy Jerry world and the family that would make people uncomfortable. Here's Mangini.
I think the issue is, with a GM, what you want to have as a head coach is the ability to have constructive conflict. You want to fight through issues. You want to disagree. With the owner, you can, owner slash GM, you want to have conflict. But at the end of the day, you're going to do what he wants you to do. So you may not get to the right decision. You're just going to get to whatever decision Jerry wants.
Listen, nobody can sit in a room with Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, and you're an outsider, and not think about, I just bought a house here, I have daughters here, I don't want to make Jerry and Steven mad, but I totally disagree with what they're saying. And Steven and Jerry are smart guys and good guys and successful guys, but sometimes you don't understand that your name has so much power and leverage and fear surrounding it. It scares off good candidates and scares off really good conversations in the room. And so Jerry there was sort of bragging about being the GM. He was actually diagnosing the problem, which is it's too much cowboy with the cowboys. Go outside. Have influence beyond your athletic department and your family. And it's a great business. It's a $5.5 billion business. But I don't think the Cowboys have the best people in the NFL with all of their NFL operations. I think their scouting department's done a very, very good job. And I do think the Jones family loves college football on Saturday. They watch it. They love it. It's a college football family. They'll watch the Texas Longhorns and Arkansas and Big 12 football on Saturday, whereas Belichick's not as much into that. So that part I like. But I just think sometimes you become insular. Smart people can make bad decisions and just don't understand the power they have and the limitations they create. Okay, here's an interesting story. Lamar Jackson's playing tomorrow night. He's obviously, it's fascinating. We have seen lots of quarterbacks who are athletic. Michael Vick, Cam Newton, Colin Kaepernick. They all work. Do they all last? Has always been my point. They all work initially. RG3 was rookie of the year over Andrew Luck. They all work. Do they last? Cam's now all beat up. RG3 got beat up. Michael Vick didn't quite go initially as we thought it would. So Earl Thomas, former Seahawk, now a Raven, he said he's noticing some of the hits in the last couple of weeks, and NFL needs to step in here.
Every time somebody hits him, man, he don't need to be taking those hits. And I think the refs need to pay closer attention to that as well, you know, and protect them a little bit more. Because teams are trying to do, I'm not saying they're trying to hurt Lamar, but, you know, they're definitely going at his legs more than they was doing it at first.
Yes, they are. They're not trying to end his career, but they are trying to hurt him, at least for the next 3 hours, so he has to go to the sidelines. It's very interesting here. He is so fast and electric that there's a term in basketball called breaking a guy's ankles, where you make a guy look really bad. Even Allen Iverson even broke Michael Jordan's ankles a couple times. That Lamar is breaking ankles. He's making guys look really, really bad on film. Like, he's embarrassing corners. He's embarrassing linebackers. And you go to that film room on a Monday or a Tuesday, and it's a brutal film session for you as a linebacker. And those guys do not forget. And so there's a lot of comparisons to Lamar Jackson. But one of the things that we haven't mentioned Cam Newton a lot. So when Cam Newton came into the league, he embarrassed guys. He ran them over. He was so big and strong. And I said, Cam's got to get out of this Superman thing because he's gonna create some embarrassment. He's going to run over a corner, run over a linebacker, make him miss, do the Superman. That ain't going to play Monday in film session. And did you notice after Cam had his most profound year, the MVP year, do you remember how the hits got cheaper, later, and uglier on Cam Newton? Because when Lamar gets to it, remember those Cam Newton? Cam Newton started having big success, and people started hitting him up high. Remember that hit against Atlanta? People started hitting him late because he had embarrassed them with a Superman. Now, Lamar doesn't do the Superman stuff, but he makes guys look insanely unathletic who have a lot of pride. And my point is on this, they're not trying to end Lamar's career, but they'd like to knock him out of games. You talk to these old school NFL guys, every single one you ask about him, they're like, oh, this wouldn't happen. We'd just knock him out. You just not run and make, you're not going to make us look bad. Now, Tom Brady can embarrass you with his arm, but players understand that's what quarterbacks do. Running backs can embarrass you with their legs. Everybody in the league knows that's what they're built to do. But when the quarterback, the star, the highest paid, the face of the franchise starts wiggling out there, they're not supposed to make you as a linebacker look stupid, or you as a corner, or you as a safety, or as a defensive end. And it's no fault of Lamar. This is just a reality, is if he gets to a Super Bowl, everybody in the league is going to spend an entire offseason going, how do we stop him? Just like they did Cam. And the answer was, hit him a little late, hit him a little high, take the penalty. And so when Earl Thomas says the league's got to step in, this is why I keep preaching, Lamar, learn to slide. Do not let the NFL dictate your future. This is why Russell Wilson lasts. He's a baseball player. He's a great slider. Kyler Murray, baseball player. Great slider. Aaron Rodgers didn't play baseball. He's still a pathetic slider. I watched a kid this weekend that played for Georgia, Jake Fromm, is the worst slide I've ever seen. Don't leave this to the NFL. Lamar, learn to slide, learn to get down, because you are so gifted, so nimble, so fast, so dynamic, you're humiliating guys. And they don't have a way to solve it. So they'll take it into their own hands. They'll hit you late, a little higher, a little uglier, take the penalty, deal with an ejection. I guess my takeaway on Earl Thomas is, hey, the NFL's got to step in. Don't leave it to the NFL. Listen, for 10 years, they couldn't figure out what a catch was. Do not leave it to the NFL. Lamar, I would literally hire a sliding coach. I would, because he is so good, he's making guys look so bad, they're going to take it into their own hands on the defensive side. By the way, he plays tomorrow night against the Jets. It is not a good matchup for the New York Jets.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Yeah, I want to talk about this Le'Veon Bell story. Le'Veon Bell's been a very good New York Jet. He hasn't had a great year because their offensive line, you'll watch it tomorrow night, is awful. I think it's as bad as any offensive line in the NFL. I've been told they're not happy with any of their offensive linemen. They're going to draft three more offensive linemen acquired. They don't like any of them. And so Le'Veon Bell hasn't had a huge year, but he's been a good teammate, a good guy, and he's a terrific player. He really is a good spirit. He understands the business. He's not bothered by trade rumors. So he got in trouble because last week he got the flu and he didn't play for the Jets as they beat Miami, but somebody saw him bowling at 1 a.m. and people did not like it. And I thought to myself, time out. So you dig a little deeper on this story. First of all, he was ruled out by the coach, Adam Gase, because he'd been sick all week. And the doctors told him, you've lost 9 pounds. You can't play a football game. You're too dehydrated. We've all been sick like that where you lose a lot of weight. And so Adam Gase didn't want him around the players. What do your bosses always tell you? Don't get everybody else sick. I tell my staff this all the time. You're sick, get out of here. I don't want to get Joy sick. I don't want to get Goulet sick or Tui sick. Get out of here. So the coach is like, the Jets have also had a lot of ugly press regarding their medical staff this year. So they're going to err on the side of go home. Secondly, he goes bowling. It's Saturday at 1 a.m. So it's actually like, you know, it's almost the next day. And then Sunday, the Jets beat Miami. He doesn't play. The bowling story comes out. He looks bad. First of all, bowling with friends is not carrying a football 20 times in the NFL. Go to a bowling alley. Look around. People eat nachos as they bowl. Okay, go to a bowling alley and look around. It's not the most athletic people in the world. Okay, going bowling with family is not the equivalent of taking 17 shots to the rib cage, blocking pass rushers, and catching passes in the NFL. Okay, so this idea that, well, he is good enough to bowl, folks, it ain't exactly the U.S. Olympic track squad at a bowling alley. You know what I mean? Look around. The second thing is, his doctor had told him, you can't play. This has happened to me several times. About three or four times a year, I don't get big flus, but I get a fever. I'll get a 24-hour fever. And about once or twice a year, I just don't come to work. Number one, I don't want to get everybody else sick. Number two is I don't have the ability, I think, to put on a good show because my energy is low. So I'm not going to cheat the audience, cheat Joy, cheat everybody. I don't have the ability to do a three-hour show and talk this fast. But I do have the ability to go to the store and buy some Theraflu and go to the market and buy things that'll make me healthier for 45 minutes and walk around. I just don't have the ability to do a three-hour show and the prep, and I'm hot. So Le'Veon Bell comes out and he says, folks, got to give me a break. Here's what the doctor said.
They was unsure about my energy and my hydration and things like that, so they helped me out of the game. But they did advise me to get out of the house and move a little bit. I had a lot of family and friends there because they were expecting me to play. So everybody was in my house just kind of looking at me. And I felt better, felt a lot better, so we went out bowling, had fun.
It's a non-story. The optics may not be great. I get that. But a running back is the last position in the NFL that's not protected by the rules. They still take shots. You can't hit a wide receiver. You can't hit a tight end up top. You can't hit a quarterback. You can't even put your face up in a left tackle, right tackle's face, right, as a pass rusher. You can smoke a running back. So a running back who's lost 9 pounds, can't play this week, is not the same as feeling a little better, fever dips, you hydrate a little bit, and you bowl with friends for an hour and a half in a local bowling alley as you eat nachos and drink water. This is a non-story. Optics aren't great, but they're not that bad either. Reasonable people can see the truth in this story.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
WEEI Radio in Boston did a blame pie yesterday. We like blame pies. We did one with the Lakers before the season started. Belichick and Nick Cesario are their guys. The personnel department got 30% of the blame. And this is what I've said. In the last 5 years, the Patriots have not drafted a Pro Bowler. Joe Tooney, offensive lineman's their best draft pick, never made a Pro Bowl. Jamie Collins is their last defensive player drafted who made a Pro Bowl. I'm not saying Belichick doesn't know what he's doing with personnel. He's obviously a smart guy. But when I watch the Ravens and I watch the Chiefs and I watch the Niners and I watch the Seahawks and I watch the Saints, I see youth and athleticism and perimeter players, and I don't see it with New England. So I think some of this is front office. And Nick Wright, my buddy, first things first, via the Coward Global Satellite Network, in your blame pie, Mr. Wright, Belichick, Brady, where does it land for you?
Tom Brady gets half of it, and the other half is divvied up amongst injury luck, retirement, formulation of the team, and lack of development of the receivers. But I do love how this is happening, how right now you gotta blame one of the GOATs, and what we're seeing is the quarterback GOAT has a hell of a lot more loyalty from folks in WEEI in Boston or folks in Los Angeles in your television studio. If you got to throw dirt on one of them, well, Belichick, really, how good is he? Brady, it can't be his fault. I mean, look at these passes. I mean, obviously someone ran the wrong way. Obviously that defender's not supposed to be there. Obviously the first pass we showed where it goes 30 yards past the guy. Obviously you should have caught it. I mean, look at this. Tell me the wrong route that was run by the referee who's closest there. I don't know. Conflicting reports. But listen, you got a 42-year-old man trying to play quarterback. It's not going to work that well. And this is what you're seeing. So, yeah, Brady gets more than anybody else. But it's hard to blame him because he's just playing his age. But his age is not a very good one in the NFL.
By the way, I said this after the Chiefs won. I think I picked Kansas City to win. I thought it'd be more comfortable. And I thought that game shouldn't have been that close. It should not have been that close. The block punt, they got a couple officiating breaks. I thought it was a bad win for Kansas City. You're from there. I know that doesn't play well. Aren't you concerned a little?
It's not because I'm from there.
I mean, aren't you concerned a little?
Unbelievable.
That it was that close.
Colin, you're not
bothered at all.
That was that close. Colin, the Pats ran everything this side of the annexation of Puerto Rico to try to formulate some offense, and they couldn't get out of the teens. They won the turnover battle and blocked a punt and couldn't get out of the teens. The thing that should be that going into the game was concerning for the Chiefs was their run defense, and the Patriots could not run the ball at all. Brady had never lost a game at home with Julian Edelman against an AFC opponent until this weekend. Belichick had never lost in the regular season to a quarterback under 25 until this weekend. And you're now going to give me the style points argument? Last year, when they scored 31 in the second half in the regular season, 31 in the second half in the playoff game, you told me, ooh, fancy Patrick Mahomes, all his toys, but can't get it done when it matters. He's got one win in 38 big games in his career. And now, going to Foxborough, beating them, knocking them out of contention for the one seed, they're going to have to hold on for dear life to get a bye. You're not that impressed? Hey, that is a bridge too far even for you, my friend.
Well, you make a compelling argument. Okay, I didn't like OBJ to Cleveland. Now, I did think Baker and him would be productive. He runs the best slant in the league, and Baker was, at least at one point, accurate at throwing a ball. But I never bought into that he wanted to be there. I think he's done some validation seeking, the orange Bentley, the visor, look at me, he knows his brand is dying. I don't think he feels Baker is, he doesn't want to be tied to him for his future. There's just more great quarterbacks, even in his own division now. So I don't buy the OBJ to Cleveland thing. Here's what I worry about, is that the GM is going to have to acknowledge, okay, I butchered the coaching hire, and I butchered the OBJ trade. And I don't know if that GM's willing to admit that because he's not getting another GM job. Where do you land on the OBJ Cleveland? I know you have a relationship with OBJ.
Yeah, I think it is worth reminding the audience, as you did, he didn't ask to be traded to Cleveland.
Right.
I think he thought maybe San Francisco, maybe New England. And when he was traded to Cleveland, he thought what I thought, which is, well, it's Cleveland, but at least for the first time in my career, I'm going to get to play with a good quarterback. Instead, Baker's been worse this year than anyone, even you, could have possibly anticipated. And Odell has been on his best behavior, but living in Cleveland and not winning and not getting numbers and seeing your brand diminish, as you're saying, that can't be a ton of fun. Your point that it's going to be tough for Dorsey to admit defeat on this so quickly when he's going to have to immediately admit defeat on the coach and his crown jewel, which is Baker, is obviously right now a stock that is dropping. Those are all really good points. I hope Seattle saves him. Seattle's got the picks. They've got the need. It would also, I think, maybe do Odell well to be in a cosmopolitan city, but like a cool American city, but one far away from everything. Because the first 3 years of his career were the best opening three years of a career any receiver's ever had. The next 3 years have not been. And you only get so many years. And so I'd love to see him with Russell Wilson. The people talk about Green Bay. If my friend Odell goes from New York City to Cleveland to Green Bay, I don't know if he'll be able to handle it. And I'm not saying it's lost in Cleveland yet, but I do think they are, and we've talked about this before, they're your neighbor who already had a Lexus in the driveway, but the roof was leaking, and then they came home with a Bentley, and you're like, but that roof is still leaking, bruh. And so it hasn't worked out in that regard. I think you have been correct on that.
Let's go to the Dallas Cowboys finally, Nick Wright. I said you can be brilliant and have a blind spot. And Jerry Jones, his coach is a former Cowboy. His coordinator is a former Cowboy. His quarterback is a former Cowboy. The director of scouting is Jason Garrett's brother. The defensive tackle coach is a former Cowboy. It's real insular. It's real insular. They're not going globally to find the best people. It's a bunch of family members and people within the family. I think that's the problem. I think they have an average coaching staff. What say you?
Yeah, I think the coaching staff right now is the issue. You can't be this year, Colin. They've scored more points and allowed fewer points, gotten more yards and allowed fewer yards than Green Bay. Yet Green Bay has 10 wins. They have six. And you can't even just say, well, it's the quarterback difference, because this year Dak, he hasn't been quite as good as Aaron Rodgers, but he's been relatively close. The coaching staff's been disastrous this season. And so they obviously need to overhaul it. You can't be 0-5 in one score games, 0-6 against teams with a winning record. But I'll defend Jerry Jones in this. I think everyone acknowledges that Jerry Jones, the owner, the marketer, the stadium builder, is an A to an A plus. People say, but Jerry Jones, the GM, with the meddling and the press conferences, I don't think he's ideal, but you need to look no further than the NFC East. Jerry Jones, take ownership out of it, is a better GM than Bruce Allen. He's a better GM than Dave Gettleman.
Yes.
He's probably not as good of a GM as Howie Roseman. And so, like, I understand Cowboys fans, they want Jerry to take a step back. They want to sacrifice good in the pursuit of great. Sometimes you sacrifice good in the pursuit of great and you end up with awful. That's the concern there. So it's also one last thing. It's hard to find when they should have fired Jason Garrett prior to this year. It was 8-8, 8-8, 8-8. Then they go 12 wins. Then Tony gets hurt. Then they go 13 wins. Then Zeke gets suspended. Last year he was teetering at 3-5, but they trade for Amari and they salvage the season. So when was the year Jason Garrett was supposed to be fired? The answer is right now. And then what will probably define this last part of Jerry's time owning the Cowboys is by who he hires to be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Hope he makes a hire that makes him a tad uncomfortable. I generally think that is the answer in all businesses. Nick Wright, first things first. Good talking to you, bud.
Thank you. Does Patrick Mahomes now have two big wins in his career? Does he have two? Does he have two? Is
two.
My question.
He's got two.
All right, good. Thanks,
two
man.
Big wins on See my you, big buddy. Card of big wins.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Something last night. It was on HBO. It's called The Art of Coaching, Belichick and Saban. Well, if you listen to this show, this is candy for me. I mean, this is like dinner. I get a plate of candy. Meth, perhaps. But a healthier version. So they're talking about a lot of things. And, you know, something over the course of my life that simplicity is really good. I tell my kids this all the time. Life's getting more complex and there's more voices. Try to simplify your life. The same stuff that makes me happy today made me happy 30 years ago. Come home, I got two dogs, they come jump into my arms every day. That makes me happy. I go home, I take a 30-minute nap, it makes me happy. I work out every day, that makes me happy. I have a cocktail at night and hang out and talk to my wife, and that makes me happy. When my kids laugh or they succeed, it makes me happy. The four or five things that make me happy, have mostly outside of having kids, I didn't have kids early in life, make me happy. And it is interesting. One of the other things I believe to be true that gets overstated. People say to me all the time, oh, my son, he wants to be a sportscaster. And I always say, is he a hard worker? Because you're not going to be any good unless you work hard. Because Howard Stern worked hard, and I work hard, and Joe Buck works hard, and everybody that Stephen A. Smith works hard, and everybody that does this at a high level works really, really hard. And it doesn't matter what prep school you go to, and it doesn't matter what college you go to. It doesn't matter. I make a lot more than most guys that went to Syracuse in Missouri. It doesn't matter. They don't put the time in I do, or Joe Buck does, or Howard Stern did, or any great broadcaster around the country. There's a zillion. Okay, so the point is, Belichick and Saban are talking last night, and this sounds simplistic. It sounds like you can't believe it. It sounds like nothing. And yet, Saban's talking about Belichick and his attention to detail. Here it is.
One thing that you do that a lot of the NFL guys don't do, I don't know that you've ever picked one of our players that you never talked to me before you picked them. And there's a few other guys in the league that do that. But then there's another 30 teams that I never hear from, and they pick somebody, and I'm saying, how could they pick that guy, you know, or whatever. You know, and then they come back and say, well, we didn't know this. Well, all you had to do was call, you know, and we'd have told you the good stuff, and we'd have told you any issues.
30 NFL teams don't call Nick Saban.
That's remarkable, actually.
It's just call Nick Saban because he knows the odometer on players. Hard work. Pick. Hello, can I talk to Nick Saban? I run the New York Jets. He'll take the phone call. You want to go into analytics. You wanted this. You wanted that. You want the people at the top of these industries. They just work harder. They make phone calls. I said this last year. The New York Jets had the worst draft I'd ever seen. So they got their first pick right, Quinnen Williams at Alabama. That was good. After that, they took four guys. This is a rebuilding franchise that can't have misses. They took four guys. Two were total head cases. One's already gone an hour after they drafted him. Two were injured. So four of their first five picks had head case issues or injury issues. I called another team that's well run and they said, we didn't even have those guys, three of them on our board. We took them off the board. They were undraftable players. One was a head case. Two were a head case. One had an injury issue that we weren't comfortable with. Like, do homework. Make calls. Look at injury reports. So whenever I see this stuff about, you know, oh, it's this that wins football games and that wins football games, it's not that. There was another moment where Belichick was talking to Nick Saban. So instead of Saban talking on this HBO show, Belichick was talking to Saban. And Belichick told the story. He goes, you know, I'll walk on a plane after we lose a football game. And everybody's on their iPads and they're looking at their tech and their analytics. And Bill said to Nick Saban last night, and I look at those guys and I'm like, guys, we didn't win because we couldn't tackle. You got to be able to tackle. And we didn't tackle very well. It's the basics. In a very complex world with a million choices, the right answer is always, always work harder, simplify the complicated, and you'll win. Belichick and Saban. Nobody works harder at recruiting than Nick. Nobody's into more details in the NFL. Practice at New England is just different than everybody, than Belichick, and that's why they're at the top. That's why they're stars. Gucci Mane says what, Joy? What does he say?
Nobody cares. Work harder.
Dit. Pick the phone up and call Saban if you're going to draft one of his players.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So yesterday, Joy and I got into this thing. She loves Joe Burrow. And I said, I like him. But I think the media is going crazy, and I've got some. So I went and made some calls and thoughts, what my eyes were telling me and my opinion. I wasn't seeking confirmation. I was seeking opinions from information from people. So you ready? Here's what I worry about. With Joe Burrow at LSU, who's going to win the Heisman. I'm always very reluctant on quarterbacks from powerhouses, recruiting powerhouses. Alabama right now, zero NFL starting quarterbacks. LSU right now, zero NFL starting quarterbacks. Ohio State, one, and he's not very good. Yet Cal has two, and NC State a few years ago had four. And there's a reason for this. There's a theory, and I don't even think it's a theory. I think it's a reason. College football for a quarterback at a powerhouse like LSU, five-star offensive lineman, five-star receiver, five-star running back, four-star tight end. It's a world of comfort and time, and receivers are wide open. But when you go to NC State and Cal, it's a three-star offensive lineman and a two-star receiver, and the windows are tighter. It's a world of duress. And when you make that leap from college and you've been under duress at Boston College, Cal, NC State, Louisville, to the NFL, it's an easier, less daunting, less jarring segue. If you go from, you know, Texas, Bama, LSU, and you have 4.5 seconds to throw, and the receivers are wide open. That is not the NFL. That's not the NFL for Tom Brady and the Patriots for the last 20 years. It is getting hit, moving, sliding, fast, throw, window, small. And so Joe Burrow plays behind great players. Last year, this guy completed 57% of his throws. Couldn't win the job at Ohio State, and now he's the best player in college football. You don't think it's LSU's talent? Now, I'm saying, I like Joe Burrow. He's got the requisite size. He's got a good arm, but not great. He's athletic, but not crazy. He's a good NFL player. But I want to give you an example of this. Here's the current AFC playoff quarterbacks. Look where they went to college. Louisville, Michigan, Texas Tech, Clemson, Wyoming, Samford. One's a recruiting power. Clemson. That's a big boy recruiting. Five-star guys everywhere. Let's go to the NFC starting quarterbacks. Where did they go to college? Eastern Illinois, Cal, Purdue, Mississippi State, Wisconsin, Michigan State. No recruiting powers. So those guys were getting the you-know-what kicked out of them in college, and now they go to the NFL, and it's less jarring. LSU, no NFL starting quarterbacks. Bama, no NFL starting quarterbacks. Ohio State, one, he's not very good. Game's too fast for him. Right now, it's just too fast. Of course it is, because he played at Ohio State. And they ran drag routes, and he throws a six-yard slant to Paris Campbell, who runs for 80 yards. That's not the NFL. It's not the way it works. And I'll give you an example. Joe Burrow faced a kid this year. I'll give you an example. Joe Burrow faced a kid this year named Jordan Love from Utah State. Joe Burrow looked great. Jordan Love looked terrible. Joe Burrow won 42-6. But Joe Burrow's got a great coaching staff, not a good one, and great players. And Utah State coaches, not great. I'm told it's a below-average staff, and they didn't have good players. Don't be shocked if Jordan Love, who will drop in the first round and go to a Carolina, LA Chargers, go to a team with players, doesn't end up having a better career than Joe Burrow, who goes number one to Cincinnati. Not a great owner, not a great front office, not a great scouting department, a terrible offensive line, AJ Green, and cross your fingers. And in that game, everybody's like, oh, Joe Burrow's way better. Joe Burrow's got an NFL coordinator. Jordan Love doesn't. But Jordan Love's going to drop in that draft and go to a team like 15, 18, 22, 24 with a great coach. And as Bill Belichick said last night in HBO, no player can overcome bad coaching in pro football. So that's my whole point. I like Burrow, but my people are all that I talked to last night have my same concerns. They like him, but it's hard to judge a kid at LSU when you're throwing. Look at the Cleveland Browns. OBJ, where'd he go to school? LSU. Jarvis Landry, where'd he go to school? LSU. LSU's a football factory. They got 38 guys on that roster that are NFL players. Utah State's got one, the quarterback.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Quarterbacks, say this every year, I say it 100 times. Being a quarterback's not about, I can throw the ball a long way. Being a quarterback, 30% of the contract is leadership, being a grown-up. It's why I wasn't a fan of Baker Mayfield. I don't think he's a bad human being. I think he's got bad instincts. I think he's immature. I think he's cocky. His personality, I said, it's undraftable if I was a GM. It's not undraftable in the league. I couldn't draft him. That's the most important position, and you set the table. There's a reason Tom Brady does a Monday radio appearance in Boston. It's not the money. Tom's got a net worth of $500 million with his wife. They do it to set the table for the week. Reiterate what Belichick says. Here is the messaging for the week. Going ahead, it gets played on all Boston stations for all the Patriot fans, for the world, the macro view of the world. Tom goes on radio and reiterates Belichick's worldview for the week. He doesn't do it for the money. Tom puts out fires. What do you make of your defense? Well, you remember last week? What did he say? Can't blame the referees. That was Tom's message. That was Belichick's message. Don't blame the referees. It's on us. That comes from Belichick and Tom. They set the table. So Baker Mayfield, after a game, rips the medical staff and has to apologize on Twitter. Well, yesterday, so that door was opened by Baker Mayfield. He started a fire, didn't put it out like Tom. So Jalen Strong, a former Cleveland Brown, went to Twitter yesterday and ripped the medical staff of the Browns. And I can see all the Browns fans, as delusional as they are, saying, look, 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 Baker was right. No, 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 no. Jalen Strong wouldn't say that if Baker didn't open the door, because Jalen Strong can't stick in the league. Jalen Strong can't play. He's not an NFL player. And we'd all go, oh, stop making excuses. You can't play. I mean, he couldn't stick anywhere in the league. But when Baker opens the door, now he comes out, makes an excuse for his career, and it validates it in his eyes. Ah, it's the medical staff because Baker opened the door. This morning, the owner for Cleveland is pissed. He looks like a guy that can't even hire the right medical staff. The medical staff is furious. They look like clowns. The GM, John Dorsey, I guarantee, is putting out fires because the medical staff's furious at Baker, who opened the door. Baker, that C on your uniform stands for captain, not cocky. When he came into this league, I heard about his great leadership qualities, and I said, what? The grabbing the junk stuff? The police video stuff? What are the leadership qualities? I don't see them. I saw him with Russell Wilson. I see him with Lamar. I've seen him in the league with Andrew Luck. But I don't get it. This as a core, the opposite of leadership is calling out coworkers. This door was opened by Baker. No way a guy, a kind of a guy that couldn't stick in the league, is going to come out and rip a medical staff because people would just laugh at him and go, dude, you're just not good enough to play. But once the quarterback opens it up, just a little bit, the door is open. Now he fires about the medical staff, and now Dorsey's furious. The owner's furious. I told you this yesterday. I think there's a growing group of people in that organization that are about done with Baker. Now, remember, he doesn't make any money now. He's going to make real big boy money in about 2 years. There are going to be hands raised in those offices saying, I'm over him. I'm over it. I remember what he did with this medical staff stuff. So you can keep defending him, but in the end, that door was opened on the medical staff, and this morning, it is not a fun place.